The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just wrapped up a three-game set with the San Francisco Giants, taking two games out of three in that series. So they now stand at 18-14 on the season, and they currently occupy third place in the American League East. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, is Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, how are you?
I'm good, man. I'm looking forward to being a part of one of these where we actually won some games. So maybe be on the positive side of things for once.
I know. Yeah, we've had some bad luck to start the season on the midweek show, but we finally get to do a positive show, winning series. That definitely helps. So good for to be sure. Here for that. And where can folks find you on Twitter?
At jshill20.
Awesome. Also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
Not too shabby. Red Sox did a little bit better than I picked on the prediction show. Logan Webb, Cy Young runner-up last year in the National League. And I kind of felt, once it all unfolded, I'm like, Bailey had the book on him. I shouldn't be shocked. I'm kind of surprised I didn't at least consider it, but I don't think there was any way I could have picked against him. But, yeah, it was an interesting series. The rest of it went about the way I thought it would, though.
Yeah, I was a little bit opposite. I had them losing that first game against Logan Webb, but I'm biased because I picked Logan Webb to be the National League Cy Young winner on our prediction show. So there was a little bit of bias in there, but yeah, they got to him and ended up having a pretty good series. So Red Sox are doing their thing. They're treading water, as you know, despite half their roster being on the IL, it seems like. So a good series for them. And, you know, I think for the first time this year, we get to do a midweek top five show this time. So certainly a good feeling. So we're going to just jump right in. And turns out that I'm in the leadoff spot this time. So we're going to go right in with number five on the list. And we actually had a lot of guys to choose from. This is one of those series where it's kind of, you know, pretty packed in terms of guys that perform pretty well. So definitely a lot of guys to choose from. But coming in at number five, we have Willier Abreu, who just continues to solidify his spot as an everyday, really productive right fielder for this team. And again, when you think back to what the Red Sox got him for, it was they traded Christian Vasquez for him and Emmanuel Valdez. And Vasquez was a beloved member of this team for a number of years, but you know, I think his time had passed. I think his best days are behind him. And it's one of the better Chaim Bloom decisions that I can count, is that he kind of recognized that. And he recognized that Vasquez at that point had become more of a platoon catcher, not an everyday catcher. And he got two good prospects back. Valdez remains to be seen. He just got optioned back down to Worcester. And they talked about how they're going to want to have him play multiple positions, get his versatility up. I think he does still have pop in his bat, but he needs to prove himself to be, you know, valuable in the, you know, in the field as well and defensively. So obviously he has some work to do, but Willier Abreu, he's really emerged. And, you know, opportunity has been there for him with Yoshida being injured now. Before that, it was O'Neill beyond the IL. So he's taken advantage of that. He's found his way into the lineup and he's made the most of it. And when you look at his numbers compared to Alex Verdugo right now, Verdugo hasn't been bad for the Yankees, but I think Abreu right now is the more valuable player just in terms of his age and his upside. He's proving himself defensively in Fenway right field, which is a notoriously difficult right field to play. It's one of the hardest in baseball. He's made a couple of highlight plays out there already. And with the bat, like, he got off to a little bit of a slow start, but now he's starting to barrel up a lot of balls, and he's really showing that he is a good pure hitter as well. And given his age and just the upside, this is an exciting development for the Red Sox, because, you know, you've got Yoshida on the IL right now. He might need surgery on his hand. If that's the case, he's going to be out for a while. Like, hand surgery for a hitter is a nightmare. So Abreu emerging right now at this time is perfect, because your outfield is stacked. Abreu in right, Duran in center, O'Neill in left. And then you can use that DH spot for any of these new guys who have come in. So if you want a left-handed bat, you can put Dom Smith in there and put Garrett Cooper at first. If you want a right-handed bat, you can do, you know, you can even put Connor Wong at DH, given how hot he's been, and put McGuire behind the plate just to give Wong a break from having to do that. So it does open up a lot of possibilities for this lineup. And I just think Abreu, his ceiling is pretty high. I think he's got a lot of power in his bat that we haven't seen yet. You know, maybe that's something that's going to come, but he's been off to a really hot start, and just another guy who, you know, again, give credit to Chaim Bloom, because that was one of his better moves. You got him for, again, basically nothing. I mean, given what Christian Vasquez has turned into and given what your current catcher situation is, you're not missing that guy. And Abreu is turning into a valuable everyday player for you. So great start for him. It's great to see him getting everyday playing time. And I'm really excited for what he can turn into going forward. Jeremy, what are your thoughts on Abreu?
I love his approach to the game, to each at bat. You can tell he wants it. We haven't seen enough of it yet, but he seems like one of those personalities that we find out in the near future is infectious. He clearly wants to be the guy in the big moment, both defensively and offensively. As to his approach at the plate, he just seems like he has a plan. Like, if it's 2-0, he's looking for something middle. He wants it to be, you know, if he's looking fastball, he's going to lay off a good off-speed pitch. You know, it's nice to see in a young player. And as to the power, he feels like maybe one of those guys where once the weather warms up a little bit, there's a little more pop in his bat. I think he had a stolen base in game 2. I think he had his first career triple in this series. So he's doing some stuff on the bases. He's not as dynamic as Duran, but he puts a little bit of pressure on the defense with his ability to run. So, I mean, I'm not saying he's a five-tool player, because he's not, but he does a lot of things positively. And, you know, again, I like the way he approaches the game, and he seems excited to be playing. He wants to win. And I know he's a young player, so trying to establish himself. So, I mean, that's the way you should be, but I now he's hitting .313. I know batting average isn't my favorite stat, but he seemingly, you blinked and all of a sudden his average doubled, and he's hitting in the middle of the lineup where it looks like he should be hitting.
Terry.
The triple was off of Logan Webb, and it was basically pulled right down that left field line. It took Yastrzemski a little while to get to it, and he drove in Jaron Duran on that hit. Later on in the game, he hit a double just for good measure. Was on base, if you include his walk, was on base 4 times in game 1. Just an absolute terror for that Giants pitching staff. And it's great when players live up to the hype. You know, we've seen it with Casas. We're kind of seeing it with Brian Bayo on the pitching side. And, you know, there's a couple other guys, you know, that have lived up to it. But it's way more exciting when they come out of nowhere. and you're like, wow, man, this guy's just off to such a great start. And then when they're sustaining it, which is the stage we're at right now with Willy Abreu, it's just like, man, what's the ceiling? What is the ceiling with this guy? And what I love about him is you have Tyler O'Neill, who just tries to hit dingers every time, and he has. But Abreu just, he just makes hard contact, good hard contact, not trying to do too much. And he's one of my favorite at-bats. He's probably my second favorite at-bat. We all know who my first favorite guy is at the plate. But I'm really excited. And I mean, he's hitting right now at an all-star pace. Like, if he keeps this up for a little while longer, he's going to be on the all-star team in July, hopefully as a starter. I think that would be really cool. But he's looking like he's going to be one of, you know, he's probably a top 10 to 15 outfielder in MLB, just in terms of offensive production. And the defense is just getting better and better. He made another tough catch. It wasn't quite as highlight reel as a couple of the other ones. I forget which game it was in. Might have been game two, actually. But what can't the guy do right now? And as Jeremy said, he's stealing bases. The dude's just a freakishly good athlete. And I just can't wait to see more.
He reminds me a little bit of Shane Victorino, like an early young Shane Victorino a little bit, which is good because that guy had a very good career and we all know how important he was to that 2013 team. So he just has that kind of same attitude, swagger. And I think that once he grows into that right field role, you'll see a lot more of that. So I agree. Very excited about his development. Another guy whose development has been great so far this season, coming in at number four on our top five, Jeremy, who do we got?
Connor Wong, a guy I've talked about a lot, so I'm not going to restate what I've said in the past, but just very briefly, he should be catching 4 to 5 games a week. He should be your everyday catcher. He's so athletic defensively. I know he made a great play on a ball in the Bermuda Triangle between the pitcher and the third baseman. And I just don't think a lot of catchers make that play. You were talking about Vasquez, and it triggered something in my brain, how much they've upgraded that position athletically between him and Wong. He is a freak athlete for a catcher. He continues to blow my mind offensively. He's not a big guy. In the post-game interview after the 2-6, the 6-2 win yesterday, one of the questions from the dugout reporter was, "How much are you focusing on offense?" I'm paraphrasing, right? And the answer is not much because he's so focused with the pitching staff. Back in the day, they'd have videos of Veritek like forgetting that he had to take batting practice. You know, because he'd be sitting next to Curt Schilling going over the binders, and then he'd be sitting with people in the bullpen. And that answer, the players don't remind me, but the preparation sounds like it might, because we don't hear a lot about the preparation. And we did last night after in the postgame press on field conference. So if he's really that dedicated to the pitching staff, he even hits a little bit. The way right now, he's just out of control. 3-for-7, he's hitting .351, especially yesterday, 3-for-4, a run, an RBI. Today he did get on base with a walk, so he didn't get a hit, but he still found his way on base. It just he hit another ball that missed a home run by about a foot right off the top of the monster. Could have been a home run on a different night, you never know, but like he just is, and he's been so consistent. And I don't know if Alex Cora listens to the podcast, but if he did, he listened to me, because Wong played 2 out of 3 games, as he should, in this set. And I think that should be the formula moving forward McGuire only had two at-bats. His average, he's starting to cool down a little bit. He's hitting 264. I don't have anything wrong with McGuire, but he's a backup catcher. So, you know, maybe Alex Cora, you know, did listen to the podcast. And if he continues, he can't be this good the whole year, but he doesn't have to be. If he's healthy and he can maintain that athleticism and play defense at a high level, continue to solidify the pitching staff, because it goes unsaid, but anytime you have what's going on with our starting pitchers, especially, some level of credit has to go to the receiver of the baseball, especially if he's primarily calling the game, right? So I just can't say enough good things about the player. I enjoyed his post-game press conference. He's got a little bit of personality. So, you know, I'm a huge Wong fan, huge. And I'm excited to see what he does over the course of a full season if he is playing the majority of the time.
Terry.
You guys have both mentioned Vasquez, and the Red Sox milked all of what he had. They got it all out of him, and then he went to Minnesota. We're going to see him this weekend, probably catching in at least one of those games. But
up over in Houston first.
What's that? Oh, well, yeah, he did get a ring, so that was a nice, you know, that was a nice transitional period for him. But as far as Wong goes, I had high hopes for him early on, because the season before we traded for him, he led all of Double A in home runs with 28. So the power has been there, but it just didn't. He's never been terrible since he came up, but he's never been quite the force that he is right now. And I pointed this out a couple nights ago, and I think I have on the podcast recently. It really took Bogaerts until his third year to finally break out and to, you know, start racking up those hits. And it was in I think 2016 or so, he started going the other way. And from then on, he was a great hitter. And then the power, you know, eventually showed up. And then you had Devers in his third season. That was his breakout. And the dude was a beast, just hitting bombs, hitting for average, drawing tons of walks. And Wong is basically on that same trajectory. You know, this is his third full season. And you know, he's kind of coming into his own. Of all major league catchers right now, he leads the majors in batting average right now at .373. Will Smith of the Dodgers just got a massive extension. He's 14 points behind him. And there's only Wong has four home runs on the year. A couple other catchers have just one more than that. Wilson Contreras has five. Where's the other one? Travis d'Arnaud, which kind of surprises me a little bit, is off to a hot start with the Braves, but he has five. I think there's a decent chance here at the end of the year, Connor Wong will be the home run leader among all catchers. I really believe that. And I don't care where he is. I mean, I like him at the catcher position because he's going to gun down more guys than Reese McGuire will. He's got a great arm. Probably, I don't really look at pop times, but I bet he's on par with where Vasquez was, you know, in the earlier half of his career. But if he ends up at DH, you know, one or two nights a week, that's fine too. I think he's going to produce. And a lot of his, I wish I had his batting average with runners in scoring position, because his hits count. They always count. There's always somebody on base, you know, on first or second. And those are the times, you know, he's getting his hits. It's not when there's two outs and nobody on. That's not when he's getting his one or two hits. He's making them count. So I'm pleasantly surprised. And what do you guys think's going to happen here? I mean, it looks like we're trending more towards buyers at the deadline, and we haven't been in a while. 2021, we got Kyle Schwarber, and I preferred Rizzo at the time. I would have been wrong. You know, Schwarber was a beast for us. But I think we're going to be buyers, and Kyle Teal is coming at some point. So Wong is going to put the Red Sox in a very interesting position. It's too early to worry about having to extend him, but he's also one massive trade chip. But it's hard for me because he's a right-handed bat, which you don't have a ton of right now, and Teal's a lefty.
So I actually think the decision is going to be pretty easy because Connor Wong is 27 right now. He'll be 28 in a couple weeks. So he's right now in the middle of his prime in terms of power, in terms of when most hitters hit their prime, is that age 27, 28 season. Some guys hit it before them, but on average, it's 27, 28 where the power numbers really go up. All the other numbers go up. That tends to happen. Now, the beauty of Connor Wong is that all that's happening and he still defensively is a great catcher. So that helps too. I think at this point, if you're the Red Sox, you know, you Reese McGuire's the odd man out. If Kyle Teal continues to produce the way he is and he really rapidly accelerates through your system, that's a good problem to have. So at some point you can say, okay, Reese McGuire, you're done. And you platoon Connor Wong and Kyle Teal. And if the Red Sox continue to have the DH spot kind of be like a floating rotational spot, then you could have some lineups in the future where Connor Wong's at DH and Kyle Teal's behind the plate and you get both bats in the lineup. Now, you know, it sounds weird having two catchers in the same lineup, but Connor Wong can play multiple positions too. You know, you don't want him to necessarily, but he's a good enough athlete that he can. So I don't think you have to do anything. If I'm the Red Sox, I get Reese McGuire out of here and, you know, ride out, do what you do Christian Vasquez, ride out Connor Wong, squeeze that the juice out of that orange as much as you can. And then if Connor Wong hits 30, 31, and all of a sudden, you know, the bat slips or he's breaking down, then you've got Kyle Teal. You've got the next guy coming. So I don't think they have to do anything.
I think this is where the Vasquez comparison falls off because Wong takes tremendous care of his body and he's a little bit of an undersized catcher. So you would think as far as durability into the length of his career, he's going to have a higher ceiling where his prime years may extend to more like a position player, 33 years old. If they trade Connor Wong, I'm going to lose my mind. You can't trade the guy that's in the middle of proving. And if he does this for a full year, he's the guy. And Teal can be as awesome as you want as a prospect. Until you come up and prove it as a major league player, you're still a prospect. You take the sure thing. You take the guy that's already done it. It's not like he's 34 and you know, Belichick always says it's better a year early than a year late. And I agree with that, but we're not in that hemisphere yet. So to me, I'd like to see I looked up quickly his information on SpoTrack. They don't really have much on there right now except that he's on a 760K deal. I'd like to see Wong here long term if this is what we're going to see. I don't think you do it right now. Like if he gets to the All-Star break and he's on the All-Star team because he's hitting, you know, 350 with 16 home runs and he's the pitching staff's still doing what it's doing and the coaching staff and the organization knows how important he is to that success, then extend him. Teal is not guaranteed to come up. The number one prospect in baseball, Holiday, came up 3 weeks ago with the Orioles and he was awful and they had to send him back down and you don't want to do that. But this is the number one prospect in baseball. The Orioles rushed him. I don't know why they did. They're good at the major league level right now. They didn't feel like they needed him. They weren't hitting and they needed a jump start. He was ninth in the lineup and I don't know what the long-term effect is, but now the number one prospect has to go back down to AAA, reestablish himself there so that he can build himself up and come back. I like Teal as a prospect. You know, I'm not a huge prospect guy. I'd always rather have the established asset. But you know, I'm like I said, I know, you know, we're going to talk about Durant and Terry's going to get all juiced up because he loves the guy, you know, and for me right now, and I'm a Durant guy, don't get me wrong, but the importance of Wong offensively and defensively is, and his ability to manage the number one starting pitching rotation by ERA, I don't think it's being talked about enough. The last thing I'll mention on this is, Jason, correct point by you. You don't want him playing defense, but he does provide a tremendous flexibility in that he can go give you an inning or at second base or potentially first base, and it's he's gonna make the, at least the routine plays. Like, you don't see that in Major League Baseball, from at least from a catcher, very often. I mean, he's that athletic. So I think he's coming into his prime. I just can't wait to see what he does for the next 5 years for the Boston Red Sox.
So he did come up, I think, as a second baseman, either second or short, in the earlier part of his minor league career. But as far as his status, in terms of, you know, how long he's controllable for, we have him through 2028. So that's 4 years beyond this one. And so that's roughly his age. We have him through his age 32 season, which would be the very back end of his prime, I would say. I don't have super strong feelings one way or the other. If we ship him, it better be impressive. we better have a very high end pitching prospect in there with a decent bat. If we decide to keep him, there's no reason to extend him if he's not, if he's controllable through age 32 as a catcher. There's no reason to extend him. But if we commit to him and we're going to say he's our guy, I'm fine with trading Kyle Teal. I'm fine with it.
There you go,
Terry. It's going to, well, I'm just saying, I'll go either way here. I don't have strong feelings right now, but I'm good with trading Teal. It's going to take, it took Connor Wong 3 years to give you this. It could very well take Kyle Teal that long to give you this. And how much better is he going to be, really? And having said that, I think Wong will come down to earth a little bit, but he's still going to be a very robust, you know, performer at the catcher position. One other nugget about Kyle Teal. Guess who his agent is?
Boris.
It's Scott Boris. So if you don't want to do business with Boris, then you may as well, right?
Well, the good thing with the way baseball's set up is Boris really doesn't have much of a say for a while. So if they trade Connor Wong for a high-end prospect, I'm going to lose my goddamn mind.
Yeah,
he is valuable enough to fill a significant role on the big league club plus prospects. He as we're watching right now. Now, who knows if he takes a dip in May and he's on the bottom five list, and you know, but. Terry, as much as I am against the idea of trading Connor Wong, is as for trading Teal, especially if he's viewed as the type of prospect that could help right away. You know, I don't know if there's a catcher, like a team out there that just has no catching in the organization. You know, prey on those people and go get tremendous value if Wong's here through 2028. We're going to have other prospects in that period of time. It's a long period of time. It's half a decade. So again, prioritize the known commodity at the big league level and don't act as if Teal is going to be a big league asset, because there's no guarantee until he does it. I don't care how good he is in the minors. There's plenty of highly rated prospects that never made an impact on a big league club.
And that's the other point. Like, as much as, you know, there's maybe a lot of people at home right now kind of, you know, shaking their heads at the idea of trading Kyle Teal, catcher prospects are the hardest to nail. It's a really hard position to get right. And look, some clubs do it. Adley Rutschman with the Orioles, that was a hit. There's been others, you know, Buster Posey back in the day. But keep in mind, the Giants tried to draft Joey Bart to replace Buster Posey at one point. Joey Bart was a first round pick. He just signed on with, I don't even know
the Pirates.
The Pirates. So yeah. There you go. And like they've already got Henry Davis, who's
an outfielder. Sure. He's an outfielder at times.
Put him in the outfield. They're not even sure if he can be a catcher. So
and he was number one overall, I think, wasn't he?
He was. Yeah. So, you know, it's not always going to work. Like you have to be open to the idea of Kyle Teal. He looks good right now in the minors, but there's no guarantee that he's going to be the next, you know, Yadier Molina or anything like that, or the next Buster Posey. Connor Wong is showing you at the major league level against major league pitching, I can hit bombs and I can throw guys out. And yeah, like I can be an everyday catcher. So, you know, again, I'm not saying like trade Kyle Teal today, but if you get a stupid good offer for him, I mean, like, let's put it this way. If the Giants offered you that kid, Kyle Harrison, who we saw in the finale for Kyle Teal, would you really say no? I mean, that's where you're at. So it's not that crazy of a proposition at all.
Teal, just for what it's worth, he's the number 37th ranked prospect in the MLB top 100. So he is highly touted. But the funny thing is over the winter, to me, Marcelo Meyer was the guy of the big three that I was willing to trade. But a month into the season, after seeing our terrible defense up the middle, I've completely shifted. I'm like, there's no way we're getting rid of Meyer at this point. You could have Meyer and Rafaela as your middle infield if you want to, and you're going to have one of the best infields at some point. And Devers, before age 30, I think will be an everyday DH. But so at this point, to me, Teal is the odd man out. Like, if I'm going to trade one, it would be Teal. I'm keeping Anthony, even though we would have all lefty outfielders. But it's just crazy how it all flip-flops.
Yeah, for sure. And keep in mind that Marcelo Meyer, if he continues to hit the way he is and, you know, ascend through the ranks the way he is, that gives you every excuse to get Trevor Story the hell off your books in any way possible. So that's also not a bad proposition either. So I agree with you on that for sure. So moving on from the offense, we're going to go to some of the pitching that really showed out in this series. So coming in at number three, Terry, who do we got?
We have Cooper Criswell, who was basically a magician out there. I don't know how this guy does it. He tops out at 88 or 89 and gets guys out. That's what he does. First inning, the Giants were 3-3 down. Second inning, 3-3 down. Third inning, 3-3 down. Fourth inning, guess what? 3-3 down. He never gave up a hit until the fifth inning. Michael Conforto finally got a knock there. And then, let's see, he was able to get a double play in the next at-bat. And then Jorge Soler hit a single. And by the way, Jorge Soler was probably my number two desired bat over the winter. I wanted Lourdes Gurriel more than anyone. And then he went off the board quickly. And I thought, man, Soler would just golf balls over that monster from the DH spot. But we were connected to him, didn't really make an aggressive play. But I thought he'd be a big factor of this series. Not a factor at all. So but anyway, so it was five innings was it for Criswell. He did allow a walk somewhere in there. I forget which inning that was. It was an earlier inning, but he got a double play, so he was still out of the inning and after three at bats. But this was a game you're supposed to lose. You're up against Logan Webb, and it was his second really good outing. And the Red Sox have been really fortunate the last couple of weeks to win all these games. You've won, well, until today, we lost the Winkowski game, but you'd won a couple of games with him starting. You won one or two of your bullpen games, and you've won a couple of your Criswell games. So, I mean, we're not really missing Bayo or Pivetta yet, because we're winning regardless. And Andrew Bailey gets all the praise, and deservedly so. We still have the lowest ERA among MLB pitching staffs and the lowest ERA among MLB starting rotations. And performances like what Criswell gave you just kind of adds to the magic. I mean, all winter long. I mean, how many times did we refresh our Twitter feeds to see, are there any Jordan Montgomery rumors? Are there any Blake Snell rumors? Like, desperately trying to add another arm. And so far, it hasn't mattered. And I asked everybody on social media, I think it was yesterday, is this who the Red Sox are, or are we overachieving? And I think with the offense, I think the offense is as good as it looks. I think this is close to what we are. I don't think there's a lot of overachieving there. But I still do think the pitching staff is overachieving to some degree. But if we're here in mid-July and we're not necessarily the best pitching staff anymore, but a top five pitching staff still at that point, I mean, what can you say other than, you know, this is just completely unexpected, and Andrew Bailey has just really transformed this whole staff and the whole program, probably the analytics as well. And I just can't believe we hung on to Dave Bush as long as we did. Like, what was I thinking? But yeah, good performance by Cooper Criswell.
Well, and the thing about the pitching staff is we're about to get Pivetta and Bayo back. So a guy like Criswell might be a guy who's really performing well that finds himself back in Worcester. But this is a Criswell segment, so I'll talk about Cooper Criswell. I'll tell you what's different, Terry, and why they won this game. They played a little bit of defense. I don't see the run-earn-run discrepancy that he has been plagued with in his other outings. His whip rate was sub one, two hits, one walk. So, you know, finds a way to strike out four guys. I don't know how he did that. I don't think his stuff's that good. And I think he obviously is fearless because he goes in there, he throws strikes. He trusts his stuff. It's just in the modern Major League Baseball, you don't expect it from a guy who's sitting in the upper 80s, maybe touch 90, you know, but he moves the ball in and out. He's not afraid to pitch to all quadrants of the strike zone. And so I assume what he's doing is he is really pitching into cold zones and finding success with it. And he can throw strikes on all parts of the strike zone. You know, I mean, his stuff's just not impressive. But look, and this is a crazy, it's not a comparison, I'm just saying, Maddox, after his first couple of years, he really didn't throw hard. He just cut it, ran it, sank it, you know, mixed pitches, would pitch backwards in counts. That's not Criswell. Obviously, he's not about to be a Hall of Famer. That's not what I'm trying to say. But, you know, maybe he just trusts the stuff and he throws enough strikes. And if the team plays defense behind him, there's enough soft contact where he can potentially be a long reliever, because I don't think he's a starter on a successful team. But I give him all the credit in the world. He came up, he's put in a couple of tough spots, and he's really pitched well. I forgot to write down his ERA, but he's been good. He gives us a chance to win. Also, you know, you'd think you'd be a little bit tight going against a guy on the other side that's coming off one hell of a year, and it really didn't seem like he was at all. So, ton of credit to Criswell, ton of credit to Bailey.
1.65 ERA for Criswell.
Yeah, I mean, that's insane. It's insane.
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, this is a signing that I openly mocked at the time when it happened, because it was just another no-name, you know, former Tampa guy who had terrible MLB numbers. And I thought, okay, that's cute. Yeah, we're going to try and do that again. But he's proven to be very effective. And I don't think the Giants lineup is a bad lineup. I also don't think it's an elite lineup. So I'd be curious to see Criswell going up against the real iron of MLB in terms of, you know, offensive power. I think the Giants have a lot of flaws in their lineup, but they're not a joke. They're not a joke team. And he went out there and pitched very well. In fact, I think he had one inning where struck out the side, and, you know, it wasn't an immaculate inning. It didn't take nine pitches, but it was close to it. I wish we could have seen more of it, but we had Tom Caron interviewing somebody in the dugout, because we all care about that so much. Which, by the way, Nesson, cut it out with that. We don't care. Nobody needs to see that. I want to see the actual game. So, side note, but that was, you know, they came back from break like, oh, by the way, Cooper Criswell had the best inning of his career. Yeah, wish you could have seen it. But yeah, he's been very effective. And I do think that once you get like Pivetta back, you get Bayo back, you start to get a little bit healthier, he should absolutely remain in that bullpen as a swing guy, as a long-term relief guy, and even as a spot starter. Like, there's huge value in that. So there are guys in that bullpen that I think you could probably send down or option or whatever once those guys get healthy. Guys like Zach Kelly, who I don't think belongs in the majors. So he's absolutely earned his spot in terms of he'll be around. You know, he's a guy that if someone goes down, you know that you can slot him in. And, you know, it's not going to be perfect every time. I don't think he's going to give you performances like he did on Tuesday every single time. But is it going to be a disaster? No, I don't think so. I think he's got it figured out. He's got sort of a different arm angle. He doesn't have electric stuff, but that's okay. I think he's kind of a nightmare for right-handed hitters, the way that he just delivers the ball and, you know, the sort of break that he has on all of his pitches. So he's an intriguing guy, and I think he's a decent pickup. And, you know, again, like, not someone that you want to see starting for you every 5 days. You know, this is just kind of out of emergency. But if he earns a spot in the bullpen, if he's kind of a, you know, piggyback guy or stretch guy out of the bullpen, I'm totally fine with that. I think he's proven that he can do it. And, you know, it's better that than like Rich Hill, Corey Kluber, you know, guys we've seen like that in the past. I think this guy at least can fulfill that role successfully. So I'm all for it. I think it's been one of the better pickups, and credits to Breslow and Bailey for kind of recognizing that and giving the guy a shot. It's worked out. So yeah, he's been really good.
So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him. Jeremy mentioned sending him down, and I think that's probably the smart move just to keep him stretched out. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if Crawford goes on the injured list for a brief period for something. I mean, he had a high workload last year. It was the first time he had ever pitched that many innings. Houck, I mean, I hate to say it, but he gets injured too. And then Nick Pivetta, I don't know. He didn't look great tonight, by the way. Lots of control issues apparently in his rehab start, and he was only slated to have one. So that makes me wonder, since we're doing so well right now with the Winkowskis and the Criswells, maybe he could end up with one more rehab start at least. But nonetheless, I mean, I think it's very unlikely we're going to have all five of our starters all healthy for a prolonged period of time. I just don't think it's going to happen. And so I would send down Criswell just to keep him stretched out. And your bullpen, Kenley's been holding down the ninth pretty good lately. Martin seems to have bounced back from that epic meltdown he had. And, you know, you're having good performances from Bernardino, Weissert. So I don't see a need to really put him in the bullpen. And the other thing, too, if it comes down to Winkowski or Criswell, I'm starting to like Winkowski a little bit more. he throws mid-90s, so in his slider plays.
Well, that's going to be an interesting decision. Personally, I would move Winkowski back to the bullpen. That strengthens up something that's been a problem, assuming he continues to pitch better. And Criswell's kind of earned it, you know? So if let's say Pivetta is starting this week, I think you just slide Winkowski back to the bullpen and delay the demotion of Criswell, because these things have a way of working themselves out where if Criswell continues to pitch well, you know, something else could happen. Pivetta may not be good. You know, there's all sorts of things that can go on in a week of baseball. So I think it currently strengthens the roster by moving Winkowski back to the bullpen and keeping Criswell. Criswell threw 79 pitches, Winkowski 53. So Criswell's also seemingly stretched out a little bit more. So I think he may be able to give you another inning plus in a start over Winkowski. So something else to consider as you tear through innings in the bullpen.
The other thing, too, is we talked about it going into this season that your rotation going into this year, you don't have a lot of guys who have thrown 150 plus, even 180 plus in terms of innings. So this pitching staff, as good as it's been early on, you know, Tanner Houck, Cutter Crawford, Brian Bayo, they're all going to exceed their career highs in terms of innings pitched this year, assuming they all stay healthy. And Bayo already got hurt. Pivetta, I'm not too worried about that. You know, he generally doesn't get hurt, but he's always good for at least 170 innings plus, you know, every year of his career. But you are asking a lot of these guys. It's a young rotation, and they're not used to pitching this many innings. So a guy like Criswell can really help them in terms of, like, once you get later into the season, once you get to like July, August, if, you know, if the Red Sox are up 10-0 and Crawford's on the mound, you know, you can pull him in the fourth inning and go, okay, Criswell, go out there for three, you know, give Crawford a little bit of a blow, you know, take him out after 60 pitches, let him rest a little bit. So I think that's a good luxury to have as well. And Winkowski does give you that flexibility too, but I just think Criswell at this point, like, I just think keeping him up here and letting him kind of develop up here is better than just, yeah, you can send him down to Worcester to be a starter and he'll go six innings and pitch pretty well every night. But I just feel like for this team this year, given the fact that it looks like they actually are going to compete, at least through the first month, you know, they're not a joke. They're, you know, third place and they're winning games that a lot of people weren't expecting them to. I would rather see him up here. And, you know, again, like if Tanner Houck's on the mound, Tanner Houck's been great this year, but if he's on the mound and you're up 9-0, you know, pull him after the fifth inning. Let him get a little bit of an extra breather. I don't think there's anything wrong with that early on in the year. So I think Criswell gives you that sort of advantage to keep him up on the major league roster. So with that, we will move back towards the offensive part of the lineup. And number two on our top five, Jeremy, who we got coming in?
Jaron Duran. I'm a big Jaron Duran guy. I don't fawn over him like Terry does, but he was in my body. I handled him as our bottom five last week. And the whole time I was saying this team's going to go as he goes. All right. Look at these numbers and see the game results. Okay. They win 4-0. He's 3-for-4, scored a run, walked. So he's on base four times with a run batted in. They win 6-2. He's 1-for-3. He walked two times, so he was on base three times with a run and an RBI. He also struck out in that game. And then today he's 0-for-4 with a K, can't get on base, and they lose 3-1. This team is going to go offensively as Jaron Duran goes offensively. It's really that simple. And I don't care if it's a walk, reach on an error, hit by pitch, catcher's interference. I really don't care. Get on base and cause havoc. Go first to third on a ball that's hit to left center that no one else does in the major league level because the arms are so good out there. It's so many different things. Scoring on a tag up where the ball's really a little too short and the outfielder's coming in already with his momentum to make a throw, he can still get there. He's athletic. He slides. He finds a way to slide appropriately inside if the throw's up the line. And, you know, and it just, I love the player. 4 for 11 in the series, like I said. Scored a couple runs, walked 3 times. The other side of it, you know, I was thinking about this tonight before the recording. We're starting to play better defense. And I was a big Rafaela has to be in center. And I was wrong. Him moving to short and putting Durant in center has created a more consistent defense up the middle, in my opinion. He's not anywhere near the center fielder Rafael is, because Rafael is like a plus-plus, like crazy athlete defender. Durant doesn't have a great arm, but he's making the plays. There's, you know, he's running balls down. He's doing what he has to make the team a more well-rounded defensive product. And it's no surprise as he goes 4 for 11 and the defense up the middle has been much better, especially with Wong when he's catching, that we win games and we're winning games. So the pitching hasn't changed. So what's changed? We're catching the ball and we win when Durant starts the lineup, you know? So, and also doesn't hurt that Devers is 3 for 9 right after him. So they were a combined 7 for 20 in this series. I mean, you're gonna find ways to score runs if anybody else can produce.
Terry.
So I covered on the last show, on the weekend show. We won the Cubs series because in that ninth inning, Duran drew a walk. He got on base via a walk, and I think he stole second, if I'm not mistaken. And I've said all along, and I'm just going to keep saying it, the more his walk numbers go up, all of his other numbers are going to go up. And he's drawn 5 walks in the last 2 series. And he is third on the team. Well, second, really, because the two above him are tied. Devers and O'Neill both have 15. Durant has 14. So he's got the on base up about, I think it's 60 or 80 points above his average. And I just think when he's patient at the plate like that, just good things are going to happen. And he didn't, you know, he wasn't spectacular. I think all of his hits in game one were singles, which is fine. Obviously, he's still going to have opportunities to steal, and, you know, Devers can drive him home. He can go from first to home better than anyone. So, as Jeremy said, you know, as if Durant is on fire, the rest of the offense just kind of falls in, and it just kind of works itself out. So, he's officially out of probably the biggest slump he's had in the last couple of years, and we'll see what he does. We got a tough pitching staff, against the Twins coming up. So we'll see if he can continue it.
I mean, him cutting down on the strikeouts is huge, because that was probably the biggest part of his game that was a problem still. I think defensively he's vastly improved. Now, is he a gold glove center fielder? Probably not. No, I don't think he's going to get to Jackie Bradley status. He doesn't have the arm. He's got the speed and the just natural athleticism to run down balls, but he doesn't have the jump that a lot of other great outfielders do. But the guy wreaks havoc at the top of that lineup. And I mean, leads the major leagues in triples right now. It's just any line drive into the gap, if you're a defender out there, you're stressed out, because you know that he's going full blast out of the batter's box. And if you fumble it for a brief second, he can turn a single into a double. He can turn double into a triple. So it's just, he is one of the more exciting players to watch on this team. And it's funny that, like, over the, you know, in the offseason, there were debates about should he be traded, like all this stuff. I think that he's at least earned a little bit of a stay on this roster, in this lineup, as an everyday player. I know that he was a late bloomer. I know he's, you know, 27 going on 28. But again, we talked about it with Kyle Teal. You can't just guarantee that every prospect in your system is going to hit and it's going to become a major player. We all would love to see Roman Anthony come up and be, you know, your version of Julio Rodriguez or whatever, but you don't know that. He might come up and he might be a bust. So Jaren Duran, again, same category as Connor Wong. He's proving it at the major league level. And he had to go through a lot of crap to get here. I mean, we were down on him. We were, you know, as a fan base, we were hounding him. You know, that sort of blundered play in center field 2 years ago where he gave up the inside the park home run. Like, he had to go through a lot. And he's overcome it, and he's really become just the catalyst of this offense. And, you know, this offense, the lineup is going to have a lot of moving parts, especially now with all the injuries. But one thing for sure that Alex Cora can depend on is that Jaren Duran is your leadoff man every single day. And, you know, he plays pretty much every single game. He doesn't get hurt. He's durable. Sure, he'll have his 0 for 4 days, but for the most part, he contributes. That's huge. Like, that's something that this team desperately needs this year. They need a guy like that to take a step forward and, you know, kind of give them a sense of direction of, like, who do we build around, right? Like, who are the key pieces on this team that we build around? Jaren Duran, I think, is absolutely one of them. So his development has just been awesome to watch. I hope that he continues to improve at the plate in terms of his discipline, cut down the strikeouts, take some more walks. I think that'll be huge for him. Defensively, just all I ask from him really is that he just gets better jumps on the ball and that he just, you know, doesn't make too many blunders. He's never going to have the arm strength of Jackie Bradley or any elite defender, but in a way that's okay. There's been a lot of great center fielders who didn't have good arms. Johnny Damon had a crap arm his whole career. Bernie Williams had a crap arm his whole career. Jacoby Ellsbury during his prime, crap arm. It's not the end of the world. Generally these days, guys have gotten so fast, it's like you don't need the cannon arm to throw someone out from third to home. So I'm not worried about that. Just get better reads on the ball, continue to make good plays in center field, be a competent defender, that's fine. If he cuts down the strikeouts and he starts becoming a real on-base threat with his speed, sky's the limit. So very excited about his development. I just think, you know, he's such an important part of this team. I hope they invest in him long-term because he's invested in the team and he's invested in himself. He's really put in the work. So he should be rewarded for that. So very happy with the way things are going with Jaren Duran. So with that, we will round things out with number one on our top five. Again, had a lot of guys to choose from, but this guy really shone this week. So Terry, who's coming in at number one?
Number one is going to be Cutter Crawford. He did finally give up his first home run of the year, but... And he's tied now with Tanner Houck, who only has one home run. So it continues to be extremely impressive. I think that was his first ever seven-inning outing of his career as well. One of the big knocks on him last year was he couldn't really get past the fifth inning. And there were a lot of starts where he didn't even get to the fifth inning. So... it's like night and day. I keep saying I'm not a Crawford guy. I'm not a believer long term, but I'm basically there. I'm basically convinced at this point. He doesn't walk a ton of guys. He did happen to walk a couple this time, but last year, every time he got called up, I was like, man, you know, if Cutter Crawford is in your rotation, you're not in good shape as far as pitching goes. And now, I mean, he's completely beaten the allegations as far as that goes. And he's one of the better pitchers in Major League Baseball right now. He's striking guys out. He's doing everything you want, you know. I would say where do you think he is? A number three, a number two? I'd stop short of saying he's an ace. I mean, because even though on paper it certainly looks like he is, but he looks like he's a number two or a three going forward. And you mentioned those annoying interviews. I was listening to most of the game today because it was an afternoon game, and Tom Caron was interviewing him in the dugout. And who was the starter? Winkowski gave up a solo home run to Mike Yastrzemski. And probably about as popular of an away team hitting a home run as you'll ever see, just because of his last name. There'll never be anything not cool about Yastrzemski hitting a dinger at Fenway. But what I liked about that interview was, Yastrzemski hits it and he's rounding the bases, and Crawford says, "We're not going to worry about solo home runs. Solo home runs aren't going to hurt you." And just the confidence and the swagger he seems to be having is just kind of infectious. So who do you trust more at this point? It's him or Hauk. And I mean, you can't go wrong either way, but you can almost pencil in a W every time Crawford goes out. Go ahead.
The thing I love about the Crawford starts is that there's people just aren't on base. So in this game yesterday, he had two walks and gave up four hits. So six base runners in seven innings. He continues to operate at a sub-1 whip. It's just so impressive. And that is that leads to the mindset that if there's no one on base and you make a mistake, you don't kill your team. Perfect example. I had the over in the Miami Colorado game this afternoon, 12-10 start. Marlins take a quick 2-run lead, right? They get out there, they get traffic on the bases, and the pitcher makes a mistake and the game flips like that, and it's 3-2. That's not happening with this pitching staff, right? You're up 2-0, solo job. You still have the lead. You're still in control of the game. He's in total command, and when he does make a mistake, it doesn't kill him because he's not dealing with a bunch of traffic. You know, if guys are throwing strikes and they're operating with a nice tempo, it's natural for the defenders to be more into the game. And so I think you're going to see less mistakes in a Cutter Crawford start because he's working quickly. He's throwing strikes. Balls are in play. The defense is engaged. It just promotes, a total team effort when we're on the mound. And his mechanics are just so wonky. I think it's factoring into his level of success. He's through 92 pitches through seven innings. It's huge. It's huge. Now, here's where I kind of have a question, because it just dawned on me that I know it's still Cora in the bullpen, but Breslow's running baseball operations and Bailey's the pitching coach. Last year, there is no way Crawford would have been allowed to face the lineup for the third time. The starting pitchers are given the opportunity to go out and face Hauk's done it, faced the third time through the lineup, and they're still finding success. And that is a philosophical difference from the 2024 Boston Red Sox starting pitching over the 2023 version. And I think if they can find some level of continued success, and you're only going to get it from a few people, right? Maybe Pivetta when he gets back. Bayo looked like he was getting there, and then he gets hurt. Hauk, I don't think you're ever going to see Criswell go in seven unless, he's having the start of his life. But, if you have 1-2 on a good week, a third starter that can get into the sixth inning or more, there's a trickle-down effect on the taxation of the bullpen. And then you may not see guys like Kelly throwing. Boozer's been good, but like, you know, just as an example, guys you don't necessarily want to see in the game. So we're not going to go back to the years where you have D'Lo and Pedro and Kurt, and if you don't throw seven innings, you know, you've let the team down. That's not modern baseball. But if you have one or two guys doing it on a consistent basis, you're going to get a healthier bullpen. You're going to be able to throw guys like Martin and Bernardino and Weissert more consistently because they're not having to throw multiple innings to bridge the gap to the seventh, eighth, and ninth guys. So I'm just – now here's my brake pedal. With Criswell, and I didn't say this during the Criswell segment, but I'm still waiting for him to have that start where he just gets absolutely crushed. And I don't think it's going to happen to a degree because Crawford's stuff is better. But I'm still kind of wondering where he's going to level off, because he's not going to be a sub-1 whip with a 1.56 ERA in September. He's not. So where's the point where he levels off? And I think then that answers your question, Terry, of where you see him in a rotation. I think in the 2024 Red Sox, I really would like to see Houck and Bayo be the 1A, 1B, because their stuff's just better. And then Crawford, your 3. And if those guys can get healthy, stay healthy, and pitch, not like they are, but, you know, find their average, you know, I think you give yourself a chance to compete into late August and September.
I think the real test will be, because we've only faced one divisional opponent so far. It was the Orioles, and it didn't go well. They swept us. But once some of those divisional teams see him for a second time, if he's still shutting them down, I mean, that's really all I need to see. And the big difference from last year and this year for him is he's a lot more efficient. In the fifth, sixth, and seventh innings, his only base runner was a walk. He never gave up a hit in those last three innings. He just got better as he went. So it's just, he continues to, you know, defy everything. Last year, I can't remember. I think it was his home numbers were terrible, and he's pitching so much better at Fenway this year. It's night and day. It's not the same pitcher. If you could just show the stats and wipe his name from them, I'd be like, oh, we must assign Montgomery or something. that's who's doing that type of damage. And but it's not. It's Cutter Crawford.
And the thing about, he is a little bit of a different pitcher this year, because, so, you know, whenever these segments come up, I like to look at Fangraphs, because with Andrew Bailey being the new pitching coach, there's a new philosophy. Have their pitch types changed a little bit? Cutter Crawford's has. He's throwing his fastball 10% less than he did last year. And I remember, like, when he first came up, he was fastball first, and that was his big weapon, because he can throw it 96, 97, like he can get up there. He's throwing it 10% less this year, and he's throwing his cutter and his slider a lot more. So he has changed his approach a little bit, where the cutter is more prominent in his arsenal now than the four-seam fastball. And it could just be that, you know, they figured out, hey, your cutter's got good movement and it can fool hitters. It's not as easy to hit as a four-seam fastball right down the middle. So they're accentuating that. And Crawford's mechanics are a little funky. He does hide the ball pretty well, given his delivery, because he kind of like, it's like a shot put thing where it's like behind his ear for a little bit, and then it just, it's on top of you before you know it. So that kind of helps him out too. Now, I hope that with the increase in throwing a cutter and throwing especially the slider, I hope that he can stay healthy through the course of the year, because we've already seen it's affected a few pitchers on this pitching staff. It's kind of becoming an epidemic around baseball in general. So I do worry about that aspect of it. But I think Crawford's ceiling is that he's a number two, maybe a high-end three, if that. I mean, I agree with Jeremy. I think that, like, your rotation should be Houck at the front, Bayo's your 1B, if that, and then Crawford's right after that. Or whatever mix. Maybe Bayo, you know, comes back and he's the ace, whatever. But those are your top three starters right now for sure.
So how you look at it is, in the playoffs in Major League Baseball, whether it's a 5 or a 7 game series, you have three starters. Who are those three guys going to be? I mean, the order might be dictated by the end of the regular season, but right now, it unequivocally, he's one of your starting pitchers in the playoffs if you get there. So, you know, and I think he would be on a ton of teams, on a ton of teams. So lucky to have him. Hope he stays healthy. You know, he's obviously, I mean, he's been so good. I mean, you know, there's going to be a little bit drop to the median, but you know, given how well he's been, what's the drop to the median? I mean, it's so.
Even if he ends up, you know, mid threes ERA, that's still, you're going to take that every single year.
Well, and now that we're into May, you know, I think the expectation should be higher, because if he's in the mid threes, he's got to be pitching in the fours for the balance of the season. I don't see that happening. So if he's a 3.5 the rest of the season, he's going to be somewhere around three, maybe hovering right around three, maybe a little bit less.
And he probably will at this point, yeah, barring something catastrophic. But, and you guys keep saying, you know, Bayo should be better. Right now, Crawford's way higher on my trust tree. If the playoffs started tomorrow, I don't want Bayo before game three.
If the playoffs started tomorrow, I can't disagree with you. Also, Bayo's not healthy. But if you're talking about top end stuff and your ability to get out of high, you know, high leverage moments in the playoffs, I personally think Bayo and Hauk, once we get to the end of the year, assuming health, which obviously we can't assume, but let's say they stay healthy, their stuff's just better. And so that's why I would put him at third. If we were to go into a series next week in ALDS, I mean, there's an argument Cutter gets the ball game one. So,
for me, the thing with Bayo is he's battling himself out there a lot of the time. And, you know, there's just a little bit of inconsistency. Guys like Hauk especially is just on a whole different level when it comes to composure. But Crawford is just very well just put together out there. And it just doesn't seem like he's losing the mental game at all. So that's just one of the things that's one of the last boxes we need to check off with Bayo. But the other thing too is, and Bayo's second to last start before he got hurt, he went 107 pitches, and I'm like, you know, it's not ideal in today's game. And then his next start, 96 pitches, and then he was on the injured list. So we'll see. But I think Bayo makes it a little bit more stressful than it should be.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I'll say is that when Bayo was last pitching, we were in the height of our defensive struggles. You know, we've been defending better. So I'd be interested to see if that has a trickle down effect once he gets back.
Yeah. And Bayo does rely on that heavy sinker a lot more than Hauk and Crawford do. So now that Rafael is at short, you know, we'll see what Grissom does at second base. They've got at least, you know, Cooper plays a professional first base. We'll see how that impacts him, because before the last time he pitched, it was, you know, David Hamilton and Emmanuel Valdez handling that middle infield. And that was, you know, basically turned into the Benny Hill show every game. So I think Bayo will be helped out a little bit by the defense being at least a tad bit more stabilized when he gets back. So, but at the end of the day, Cutter Crawford, I mean, you know, we'll see in terms of if there's a dip or whatever, but I don't think it's going to come crashing down to earth. I do think that there will be a correction to the mean at some point, but I don't see him really cratering. I think that he will solidify himself as sort of a solid number three, maybe low end number two kind of starter as the year goes forward. I just think that he's got it kind of figured out right now. He's got the swagger up there, like you mentioned. I don't think that he gets rattled very easily, so that helps him too. And it's just been a great development, because we weren't sure what we were going to get out of Cutter Crawford this year, and he's taken a massive step forward, and that's been huge. So very excited to see how that goes going forward, especially with Bayo, Pivetta coming back. It seems like that rotation could really round into form and could be a very solid force for this Red Sox team going forward. So with that, we will wrap things there. Keep an eye out for our Bastards series prediction show. We'll be giving our predictions for the Minnesota Twins series coming up this weekend. And we'll also have another episode of Clown Takes coming your way. So certainly some interesting candidates this week that we'll be going after. So keep an eye out for that as well. And obviously the weekend crew will have you guys Monday morning to recap the Twin series after it concludes. So everyone have a good weekend, and we'll see you later. Take care.